Buenos dias und herzlich willkommen bei Gate 7, deinem Podcast über Fernweh und Fotografie. In dieser Show geht es um Menschen, für die Reisen mehr ist als Spaß und Erholung. Freue dich auf praktische Tipps und Tricks, wie du tief in fremde Kulturen eintauchst und lerne, deine Abenteuer in bewegenden Bildern festzuhalten, egal mit welcher Kamera. Bist du bereit? Dann los, lass uns abheben mit deinem Gastgeber, Kai Beermann.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Gate 7 podcast. My guest today is London-based street photographer Mark Fairhurst. I first came across his work when I interviewed him for my blog, The Art of Creative Photography, about 5 years ago, and now I'm very happy to follow up with him on my podcast. Growing up in the Midlands area of England, Mark went to college and studied painting before graduating with first-class honors degree in animation. At the back end of 2010, he turned down a place in London to pursue a master's degree in writing, having decided to take up photography instead. His practice began with street photography, influenced heavily by the works of Tony Ray Jones and the works produced by the John Hind Company, before taking on a more journalistic and documentary approach to the craft. He is currently working on a number of personal projects, slowly working his way through the creative progression in photography, the pursuit of a standard, and in the process, research, development, and in the eventual implementation of ideas. His primary focus within photography is to capture and document people, their customs, their traditions, their way of life, what people do and how they go about doing it. As to what photography means to him, Mark answers, "I like that photography allows me to see what other people find so alluring and attractive. I always ask myself when I look to others, why did you take this shot? I try to figure people out, I guess. At the moment, I'm not trying to say anything with my images. I'm not trying to tell a story or change perspectives. I'm just shooting what attracts and allures me. I'm still in training, as it were, still finding my feet and way, and I think I'm heading in the right direction. I'm going through a bit of a transitional period at the moment, and it feels good." In this interview, among other things, we talk about Mark's progression in street photography, from earlier work to more recent. Mark tells how his idea of how he should personally be making photographs has evolved over time. We discuss these topics looking at specific images from Mark that you can find in the show notes of this episode. Please also head over to artofcreativephotography.com. I'll soon launch a podcast on that site, which will only be in English. You can subscribe to the newsletter and I'll let you know when the show kicks off. But now, thank you very much for listening and let's dive into the interview with Mark Fairhurst. Hello, Mark. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Kai. Am I saying your name right? Is it Kai?
Yes, it's correct. Kai.
Good. I'm glad I got that bit right. Well, thank you for having me. It's really good to speak to you again.
Yeah, thank you very much for taking the time, Mark. And well, today at the heart of this interview, there will be we'll talk about some of your images, which kind of show your progression as a street photographer from the beginning to more recent works. But before we come to that, why don't you introduce yourself briefly? Who are you and how did you get started as a photographer in the first place?
Okay. Well, my name is Mark Fairhurst. I'm 42 years of age and I'm originally from Liverpool. I spent about 2 years in Wales, 27 years in a town called Wolverhampton in the Midlands. And I've been in London for about 9 years now. How I got into photography is a bit of a long process, really. I mean, I came to it quite late. You know, in my mid to late 30s, I'd always been artistic throughout my life. I mean, my brother is an illustrator. He does a lot of work for Disney and the BBC. But it was my mom, when we were kids, who got us into art. My brother kind of took it to the next level, but I went down the painting side of things and went to college and did a couple of years at art school. From there, I went to university and did an animation degree. And after that, I was kind of a bit of in a slump. I didn't really know what to do with myself. And I decided to apply for a master's degree in writing in London. And they accepted me. However, I couldn't afford the costs to go. It was too expensive, really. So I had to kind of leave that behind. But a few years on from that, I eventually got to London. And throughout my life, I'd been doing all these artistic things, writing, painting, animation. But when I got here, it all stopped.
Okay.
And for about 2 years, I was doing nothing and I was going crazy. You know, I was really restless. And my girlfriend, she's from Poland, she knew that I was interested in cameras and she would take me around London. And I was always fascinated by the tourists with their massive cameras and their big lenses, you know. And I'd always comment on them and say, I'd say to her, they must take amazing pictures, you know. I bet I could do that. And she came home from work one night and she had like a free newspaper they give out in London. And there were loads of photographs in it. And she said, hey, have a look at this. And there were photographs of Britain, of the drinking culture in Britain and how out of control it can be, how messy it can be, and the drunkenness. And because of our historical laws here, people tend to drink a lot quicker because they're not allowed to drink after a certain time. Everything closes. And she said, it's by a Polish photographer called Marzej Takowicz. And I was fascinated by these photographs. I recognized the scenes, you know, living in Britain all my life, I knew of the culture. You know, I'd witnessed it myself and I'd been a part of it. But I'd never seen it photographed. I'd never known that anybody would want to photograph such a thing as that.
Mm.
And I was absolutely fascinated that somebody had actually gone out there with a camera and photographed it, you know. And he later went on and published it as Cardiff After Dark. And that kind of told me that there was more to photography than calendar shots and National Geographic kind of photography. And so I kept seeing this term street photography and I had no idea what it meant. So I didn't even know that it existed. And my girlfriend said, you know, just get yourself a camera, because I think she was getting tired of me not doing anything. I was restless, you know. And she knew of, you know, the painting and the animation and all that stuff. And she just said, just go ahead and get yourself a camera and take some photographs. So I did. And I went out and I got the most expensive camera you could find. You know, the biggest expensive. I've got the battery grip, the flower, got everything, you know.
Yeah.
And I went around London and I did the usual things. I went to the tourist spots and I was absolutely terrible. And I'd come back and I'd look at my work and I'd look at Marzej Takowicz's work and I'd think, why isn't my work, why doesn't it look like his? What's he doing that I'm not doing? It's really bad stuff, you know. And I kind of fell out of love with this whole street photography thing because I couldn't do it. I didn't get it, you know.
Yeah. Did you try to take it to the next level yourself, or how did you go about that? Did you read about street photography, or did you reach out to find a mentor?
Well, through looking at his work, I realized that there was a massive community, you know, surrounding this street photography thing, and so eventually I think I landed. One of the first places I landed was Flickr, in some Flickr groups, some hardcore street photography. And I was working nights in a hotel at the time, and they would have like a critique kind of thread and post your pictures and people will come and tell you what they think of it. And I kind of just ghosted that site for a couple of years. And certain names would always crop up, you know, people from the past, Tony Ray Jones, Ian Berry, Martin Parr, you know, they did crop up. And so I'd go and look at their work. And very quickly I could see a pattern of a standard that was running throughout all of these photographers. And then I'd look at my work and I'd say, you know, I've got it all wrong. I'm going about this the completely wrong way. I mean, I had a sense of how composition works and how things should be placed through my time at college and doing my painting. But I couldn't translate that into my own camera. I was struggling.
Was it just a matter of composition or also subject matter?
No, for me it was composition. It was when I went out the very first time, I was trying to make pretty pictures, you know, of anything. But once I'd kind of dig deeper into the genre and found these people, I realized quickly that composition was quite an important factor in their images. People were placed and there was a lot of spacing and a lot of layers and a lot of things going on there, which I hadn't really thought about before. So immediately my mind was focused and concentrated on that, and that's what I needed to do before anything else. Because I thought to myself, well, I can go out and maybe find some funny instances or meet weird and unusual characters in London. But it's going to be pointless trying to photograph them if I have no idea what I'm doing with the camera or if I have no idea how to frame them or anything like that. So I made sure that I trained myself to, or I forced myself to go after composition first before anything else. And, I mean, what was that? It's 7 years ago now that I started, really. 8 years ago. And I think I've only just got to the end of that process where it's an instinct now. I don't even have to think about it. It, you know, it's almost, it's natural occurrence. And I don't mind that it's taken me that long. Some people pick up a camera in a, you know, and within 6 months there, you know, they're amazing. But it's taken me a while to kind of pick it all up, and I'm fine with that, you know.
Yeah, I find that very interesting, that process that you just described, how you really got into studying other photographers in order to get an idea of how they compose their images. And can you explain a little bit in more detail how did you go about that, or how do you go about analyzing other photographers' pictures?
It was let's take the work of Ian Berry. He's he has a book called The English, and I was never afraid to get in front of people and photograph them, but I knew that I was too afraid to get in there, like, you know, maybe a meter away from them. But looking at their work, I could see I was noticing the distance that they were, you know, from their subjects. But especially with Ian Berry and Tony Ray Jones, what allowed me to kind of bridge that gap of that tiny bit of fear and getting close was throughout their work, I noticed that they were going to particular places in Britain. And these places were, you know, there were events, there were competitions or fairgrounds or displays, places where anyone with a camera, you'd expect people to be there with a camera, and anyone taking pictures, you're not going to question too much. So I focused myself on events around London, and it allowed me to get really close to these people and also get rid of any of the little fragments of fear that I had left. But I noticed within their work there was a lot of layering going on. People weren't just focused straight in the middle of the picture, you know. There was almost like a play and a dance of things happening from one side of the picture to the next. You know, it was like a visual form of poetry to me, and I was fascinated by that. And every picture, well, nearly every picture that I was looking at theirs, had this pattern and spatial awareness of everyone in the scene. Everyone was important, you know, to the frame. And so I took that with me, you know. I hammered that home into my head that it's important to, you know, if you want your pictures to look good, you have to be aware of everything in the frame. Because it's easy sometimes to be so focused on one particular person if they're standing out. Because I think it was Martin Parr said to find the energy within a scene and focus on that. And you can get tunnel vision and forget everything else that's happening. And I didn't want my pictures to be like that. I wanted everything within the frame to be important. And so that's what I took with me from the beginning. And it's taken me, you know, 7 or 8 years to kind of for it to be a natural thing there, where I don't have to think about it. But that's what I took from them.
A great point you made there, that it's not just focusing on the main subject, but you have to really pay attention to the edges of the frame and see that everything is in place there and, yeah, be very discerning.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, when I was over at Hardcore Street Photography, that message of, you know, be aware of the frame, you know, was always cropping up.
Mm.
Because somebody would take a photograph of a really interesting person, but the whole image can be ruined by, you know, your inability or a kind of laziness to, you know, be mindful of everything else that's happening beyond that person. And it can let down a photograph sometimes. I mean, sometimes it can work. Sometimes I'm not saying it's a rule or it must be that way. You know, sometimes people can be in the middle of the frame and images can look beautiful, but for me personally, you know, that's the kind of work that I first saw and fell in love with, and so that's what I take with me before anything else. And that was before I even knew really what I was going to photograph, or, you know, when it came to projects, you know, I had no idea what I was going to do with it, but I just knew that I had to, you know, be aware of it, you know, and that was important to me.
Yeah.
And I kind of went from there, really.
You mentioned personal projects. How do you go about your street photography? Is it more single images you take, or do you work on series?
It's a bit of both, really. I don't walk the streets every day. I know a lot of street photographers say it's vital that you must do it every day, practice, practice, practice. And that's fair enough. But I need something to focus on. I need like a purpose, you know. And so I'll have an idea about a series of images. And I won't go out and try and find them, but I'll know certain elements and people and scenarios will repeat, and so a lot of people, like, they'll have series of people with balloons in front of their face, or you know, juxtapositions of different colors, you know, that'll be their series or stuff like that. But I'm not really interested in that at all. I don't know, I like to create projects. Like I said, it gives me a focus and it gives me something to plan, and because I really enjoy planning stuff, you know, and saying, right, I need to be here, I need to be there, and go and find these images, you know.
Mm.
But I've been doing that a lot for the last 2 or 3 years, and I've been trying to work on approaches to those projects with the aesthetics of street photography in mind. However, this year, I'm kind of thinking maybe to give it a bit of a break, and maybe I will just go out in London every day and see what I come across, you know.
Mm.
I don't know. It's a bit different for me. I'm not after certain things. I don't really look for the pretty picture. I don't look for the juxtapositions or the unusual moments or the humorous kind of content. I'm not interested in it at all. I mean, that's not to say if I come across it, I'm not going to photograph it. Of course, I'm going to photograph it, but it's not something that I'll put out there and say, you know, look how weird and funny London can be. It's something that I think is street photography is oversaturated with that kind of content. And I can't I just can't get to grips with it. You know, for me, street photography is about how life presents itself to you, and you have this extraordinarily small amount of time to get it. But there has to be more to it than just a balloon in front of someone's face. There has to be something going on. There has to be some, even more than a gesture, there has to be some emotional content within a frame happening for me to say that's the one I'm going to keep. And I mean, even when I got started, I wanted it. I wanted the funny shots. I wanted the Cartier-Bresson kind of imagery and stuff. But I fell out of love with it, all that kind of stuff, you know, long ago. And like I said, I think the genre's completely oversaturated with this kind of content. I can't look at it anymore, you know. And I don't go on social media that often. I've only recently gone back onto Instagram and trying to figure out what that's all about. But it's the same situation there for me, really. It's just the same kind of photos and the same kind of images. You know, new people are coming into it, which is great, but they're looking to see what's out there and, you know, they're mimicking it, you know. And that's great if it's a learning process and I want to learn, but it's all I'm seeing and I have to really be selective with who I choose to follow, you know, because I want to see certain kind of content. So I don't really follow any of the collectives. You know, I've got friends in the collectives and, you know, I know people in them and, you know, they're friends of mine, but I stay away from them, the collective side and what's popular, you know, because I can get sidetracked by, it gives me anxiety, really bad anxiety.
Oh.
Because it's not that I can't, I mean, I'd love to try flash photography, you know. But about 2 or 3 years ago, it was absolutely huge, and people are going out there like Bruce Gilden and taking their photographs like Bruce Gilden. And I've always respected people's ability to be able to, technical ability to take these photographs and the no fear kind of way that they go about doing it. And I've always respected that part of it. But at that time, again, 2 or 3 years ago, that kind of photograph was saturating the genre and it was all the same and I couldn't figure out who was who. Everyone's images looked the same. It was the same kind of flashed images of elderly men and women looking shocked. And after about a year of it, I couldn't look at it anymore. And, so I just decided to distance myself from it and just get on with what it is that I personally like. And I had to come away from the internet. I just got rid of everything, and it was quite liberating, really, to free myself of this, you know, constant stream of photographs. You know, I'm all for it. I mean, more for the internet and, you know, the genre. You know, having a boost over the last 10 years, I'm all for that. But there's only so much of it that I can actually look at. You know.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's important that you're aware of what it might do to you if you immerse yourself too much into the scene, or then try to copy a certain style that's on Vogue or and that thing, and instead just follow more your own voice and what you want to express with your photography and what you want to say. I find that very interesting. And yeah, that leads us already to the process or the progression you've made over the years that can be seen in your images or the images that you sent me beforehand. And well, all the listeners, they have a chance to look at the images. I will put them in the show notes to this episode. So they will all be there. And we just try to, explain, first of all, what's to be seen on the picture, and maybe then you can fill us a little bit on the story behind the image. Well, we start with the first one.
The first one, yeah. This was Pretty soon after I'd ditched digital and gone with film, this is the first time I tried film. And for me, this was my first attempts at getting close to people. It was taken along Oxford Street, a big shopping street in London. And it was my first attempt at not just getting close to someone, but not taking the picture quickly and running off, but actually just taking my time with something and trying to be aware of everything. And it's okay. It's not great. I was starting to notice light and shadow and gesture and, you know, what people are doing. You know, that was important for me. It's you know, what are people up to, you know?
Yeah.
You know, what's going on with them? I was fascinated by that. So that was my first attempt at getting close to people, really. Like I say, it's not, I wouldn't say that any of these photographs that I sent you are particularly amazing or successful, but, you know, they do show a progression in how I was trying to work. And that was the first image. And I was happy with it. I was happy with my distance.
Mm-hmm.
She eventually realized that I was there. I mean, she was a tourist, and it was a very busy day. It was very bright, and she was looking very confused and bewildered and a little bit lost, you know. And I thought at the time, is she shielding herself from the sun, or is she in a state of confusion and panic?
Yeah, it could be both.
It could be both. But because I had that thought, I thought, well, that's enough for me to take the photograph, and I took it. And then I think I took another one, and then I moved on. But that was it. I was happy with the fact that I was getting close. You know?
Yeah. Yes, you mentioned all the elements. You're very close to her. There's the gesture she made. She's shielding her eyes or her face. And
it's a cliched shot now. I mean, everyone's got that. Well, a lot of people have got that photograph now, with, you know, people blocking their eyes from the sun. You know, and at the time I took it, I didn't know that. I didn't know that there was cliché photographs in the genre. I just saw it, and you know, I made a mindful connection to take it, and so I took it. And I was quite happy with it.
Yeah, I imagine. Like, at the beginning as a street photographer, that's the things you have to learn. Get close to people, try to be aware of gestures, of movements, and of light. I think the element of light can be seen, or is very nicely to be seen in this image as well. How you worked it. Okay, well then let's move to the second image.
The second image, I mean, moving on from the first one, I kind of regressed, and I was terrible, you know. It wasn't working. I wasn't always getting close to people, you know. And it just wasn't working out for me. Nothing was going right. And I decided then to throw myself into a kind of photojournalistic approach to everything. So I thought, I've got to figure everything out. I've got to really get to grips with everything. You know, I can't come home with bad images. And, you know, I don't care about that anymore. But at the time, I was really panicked about it. So I decided to kind of drop, you know, street photography, pure street photography. Like, you know, I was going out for a different cause then. So I decided to go and follow all the protests in London, because there was one every weekend. And I'm fascinated by people. I'm fascinated by what people do. I mean, throughout my websites, I mean, all the projects and things that I'm photographing, it's an interest in what people are doing with their lives. You know, it's religion or different political causes, or, you know, it could be their hobbies and interests or the things that they like to do on weekends. I'm fascinated by how people spend their time. And so my work is basically founded upon that. You know, what is it that you're doing? Why are you doing this? You know, I might see a performance of somebody in the street on a stage in London, you know, and everybody will crowd around and I'll think, oh, it looks pretty and stuff. But I'll go around the back and say, and you know, do you mind if I come and have a chat, you know, come and take some pictures? Because I'm fascinated by the process. How did they get from this stage to this stage? And do you mind if I document that, you know? And so I followed these process around London, and I got speaking to a lot of the press. You know, there was press there from different agencies, you know, a lot of amateur press, you know, some Getty Press and BBC and whatever. And I'd talk to them and they'd give me advice and that. And I'd go home. I was back on digital then, and I'd go home with about 6,000 pictures. And I was like running 6,000 pictures through Lightroom, and it was taking me like 5 hours to get through them all. And my girlfriend was going crazy because I was, you know, from 6 p.m. I was going to bed at 1 a.m. And, you know, I did that for a year, and it nearly destroyed my relationship because of it. And in the end, I had to say, I've got to figure this out. I've got to figure out how, where I'm going wrong. Why am I shooting off so many frames? You know, I've got to drill home that compositional kind of thing, you know, that I want to kind of maintain. I want this thing. So slow down a bit, Mark. You know, when you get there, just slow down. They're not going anywhere. The protesters, they're going to be shouting and screaming for 2 hours in front of you. So just slow down, pick your moment. And so that photograph for me, it was a pretty miserable day. But I did. I took my time, and I allowed the frame to fill and expressions take place. There's a kind of different expressions going on and different things and gestures and whatever. And once I'd got it into my head that I don't need to rush it, you know, I was fine then. Once I tell myself, don't do this, I never do it again. And, you know, and that's what that photograph's about. Really, that was my turning point of, you know, slow down.
Hmm. That's a great example for what you just described. You paid very close attention to every little detail that you included in the frame and waited patiently till everything in the scene fell into place. Huh? Beautifully done.
Yeah, and it can be difficult in these scenarios because there's about 1,000 people there.
Exactly, yeah.
Loads of people around me and loads of press and stuff, and everyone's vying for their own position.
Mm.
And again, I knew I had to, it was up to me to get in position. You know, if I don't get in position, or if I don't get to where I need to be to get the shot, then I don't get the shot. It was as simple as that. And that's why I was going home with 6,000 images and nothing. You know, I just said to myself, I've got to either placing myself was as important as how I'm going to compose everything within the viewfinder. You know, that was the first step, you know, recognizing what's about to take place or what's taking place. The anticipation. And then it's, you know, where do I need to be in order to make full use of what's going on, you know, in front of me? And then the frame. And it can all happen so quick, you know. And I enjoyed that learning process. I knew that I was picking things up, that's where my project for the protest came about from. It was all a learning process for me, really, that project. I mean, I'm not 100, it's not, I don't look at it and think I'm 100% successful with it, but it's personal to me because it's really where I started to take it seriously for myself and where I kind of learned a lot. And so it's kind of personal to me, that project.
Yeah, I understand. And this single image, maybe you don't consider it to be your best shot ever, but it's an image that shows a lot about or tells a lot about where you were as a photographer in that particular moment. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what you were paying attention to. And well, in this image, it's a protest. What's this element there in the middle of what they're holding up there?
It's well, it's turned. It's you kind of seen the back of it. It's a big head of Margaret Thatcher.
Ah, okay. It's a political protest.
It's a political protest, yeah.
Okay.
You know, there are all kinds of... there was a lot of Irish there, a lot of drunk people there, a lot of old unions and miners, and they'd come along to Trafalgar Square, you know, and it was pissing it down with rain. It was really depressing kind of, it was just horrible, you know, situation to be in. And I found my safety in the numbers of other photographers, you know, because there were a lot of drunk people there.
Yeah.
So I wasn't too afraid, because drunk people, they can be unpredictable. You never know what they're going to do.
Sure.
But yeah, you know, I took quite a few. I mean, this is one. I think I got maybe two. I took about 3,000 images, and I think I got two that I think are okay, and this one is kind of okay. You know, the frame's kind of almost completely filled with different elements and that, and I like the colours and that and expressions, like I said, but I think I got two images from that night that I like. You know, and again, having said that, that was another thing that I realised, that I can come home with little to show for anything. You know, I could take a lot of photographs and have absolutely nothing, and I started to accept that, you know, as kind of a normal thing. I try to limit myself now, because I use film.
Yeah.
Exclusively film now, but I still know that I'm, even with film, I'm going to come home with maybe one or two shots, and that's something I'll try and figure out later on. But I'm quite happy with that photograph. Mm. You
know? Yeah, yeah, it's great. There's four people in that image, and they all look into different directions, and they look into the right directions. They lead kind of the eyes of the observer looking at the picture. You start probably with the man to the right. He has a bright red jacket, holding up an umbrella and looking upwards, and that leads the eye to this element of Maggie Thatcher. And then you look down, there's a man in the center looking to the left, and that woman that he's looking at, she's looking from the left up to the upper right corner. So you have a really, your eyes or the view is guided very nicely by the directions that the people look into.
Yeah, I do notice that sometimes in the photographs. There's a few photographs that I take a protest where, you know, because there's a lot going on, there's a lot to see.
Yeah,
you know, I always like to get those photographs where different people are looking in different directions, and everyone's focused on their own thing. You know, I love those. I don't take many of them, but I notice them when I have them. I suppose it's nice to get, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm glad you noticed. I always wonder if anyone picks up on that, but I'm glad you did.
No, you really got it there. It's a great image. I like it. Well, then let's move on to the third one.
Okay, the third one, I'm going to have to confess, it's a cropped image. I've cropped it basically to fit the rest of the images on my website. But this is a medium format image, so I've cropped it down. I know it's a sin, but I don't really care. You know? And this was, like I said, with the projects that started to go to different places, and Tony Ray Jones and Ian Berry, they were going to all these different events happening around the country. And so, you know, this is kind of long after the protests. I kind of stopped doing the protest pictures, and I was concentrating on these events, especially in particular the ones that are happening around London. I was looking at all the unusual and traditional events that take place each year, and I thought I'll go along and photograph them. And it was a nice break from all the shouting and screaming of the protesters, you know, and I could kind of finally inch my way along into a more street kind of photograph, you know, because protest, bit, you know, it's a bit photojournalistic, but this was more a street approach to my work with these events. And it's not pure street photography, if I want to be a purist, but it was the next step for me along in the process. So here on, it's cropped down, it's not cropped on the sides, but it's just cropped on the height. So I'm aware of, like, the people at the front, you've got the woman with the red hair and the three spectators of these druids. So here's where I'm starting to make sure that everyone's placed in a particular way. You know, in this one, they're placed like bowling skittles in a bowling alley, you know. But I'm starting to be aware of shape and form, and there isn't much going on. I'm a bit disappointed that she's on the phone. But I'm starting to arrange people now. I'm starting to really focus on my arrangements of individual people. I know there are overlaps, and sometimes I can't eliminate that. Sometimes I just can't get rid of that, you know, no matter where I put myself or how I frame things, I can't get rid of it. But this for me is a focus on somebody, you know, the one with the red hair. She's my point of focus, and I'm also concentrating on everyone else in the scene, from her to the middle of the other spectators to then the druids going off into the back.
Yes.
And again, I don't regard it as a, you know, a completely successful image, but for me it's an image where I've started to really make a mental note of everything that I've picked up so far.
Mm-hmm.
And this for me is an example of it. Whether I'm successful in it or not, I don't know, but it's okay. Like I say, it's a shame she's on the phone.
Yeah, what I like about the images that you chose, it's exactly what you said, that these images, they tell something. They might not be the best ones, but you can explain the elements that you paid attention to, and you can say, okay, this image is important because I realized that I have to focus on certain things about how to place my subject, try to see not to, that they don't overlap, and all these things. And that makes this particular image so important in the progression as a photographer.
Yeah. I mean, I'm getting close to the people. I'm looking at all the elements. I'm including everything, you know, there's the focal point of the woman, there's the people who are looking, and then it's, you know, the druids themselves. That's why we're all there. I took about four rolls of film, and the other pictures from the event, they're at quite a distance. I'm also mindful of my placing of people in those pictures. But this one for me is really what I was looking to get, you know. But at the time, I remember I don't want to encroach on or get in people's personal space. It was a very somber kind of spiritual thing that was happening. I didn't want to get in their face, or the people who were watching, I didn't want to get in their space. But there's a point where I say to myself, well, if I don't get too close, I'm not going to, you know, I don't want to go home without anything, you know. I don't want to get home and think, oh, I should have done that, or that happened, why didn't I just go up to it, you know? Why don't you just find out if anyone's bothered by you or not? And no one seemed to be bothered, and with all the events and places I've been, no one really cares about my being there or my presence, you know. But for me, that photograph kind of was my step into, you know, taking things a little bit further.
Yeah, protests are great way or a great event to practice that, to get close to people, because as you mentioned, people are they expect photographers to be there, and they mm-hmm. don't, they usually don't say anything. And
my mindset carried over. Like I was no longer, when I was doing the protests, I was no longer afraid to get in front of people. And well, I was never afraid anyway, but I was And I wasn't going around thinking I have a right to be here and take these pictures. But when I went out and did street photography, that mindset went with me, you know, and I just thought, I'm just here taking pictures, you know. And I didn't shy away from it at all. It was almost like everything in the street, like if there was a cafe scene or whatever scene it was, I just took the picture, you know, like I did at the process. I just took the picture. And once I thought I got it, I moved on. And I know fear can be a big part of people's, you know, it can stop people from doing things. But
yeah,
you'll kick yourself if you don't get it. You'll think about it for a week or two after. everyone's been in that position where they think, oh, I should have just taken it. Or they miss a moment and you go home and you kick yourself for it, you know. And I didn't want that. I no longer want to be in that position, you know. I mean, I haven't been doing it for long, like 8 years, but I think after all this time, I don't really want to go home kicking myself for a week because I was too afraid to go and take this picture. I won't allow that to happen anymore. You know? I've never been in a position of confrontation. Once in the 8 years, I've been confronted once, and that was on the London Underground. And there was this thing every year where people take their pants off, you know, they go around in their underwear. I don't know what it's for or the reasons for it, but a lot of press go and take the pictures, you know, because everyone's in London in their underwear. And I was on the tube and a lot of press, this is where I realized that the press don't care about anyone else, and they were pushing me out of the way. I hate that, you know, I hate being handled and touched. And but I realized that anyone's going to do anything to get their shot, so be quick and get your pictures. So I was taking my pictures along one of the carriages, and I got off, and this French guy and his girlfriend, he was following me, and he was trying to say something to me, and I was just on my way home, you know, through the underground network. And I turned, and he said, you know, he was like really angry, you know, why did you take my picture? Why did you take my picture? And I said, I don't know who you are. He said, if I did, I'm sorry, but you could see what was happening on the train. You could see there was press there taking pictures. And I didn't defuse it. I just walked away from him, you know. But later on, I realized that there were different laws in different countries. And I know it's different in France. You have to have permission and all this stuff. And so I realized that it's probably in him to not allow anyone to photograph him. But it's not that way in London, you know. You can do anything, really. So that's the only time I faced confrontation, and I just walked away from it, you know.
Oh. Yeah. I think, well, you should always be respectful and try. Well, if there's a situation of confrontation, try to. Yeah, resolve it in the most in a nice way, and if you can't would you erase a photo then, or
No, absolutely not.
Okay.
I mean, not even the police can ask you to erase a picture. There's no one in public or the police or anyone can demand that you delete anything.
Okay, all right.
And I knew that, you know. I mean, if he came, I mean, he was very angry, you know, so that kind of put me on a very defensive, made me quite defensive, you know, why is he angry with me kind of situation. If he had just asked me what was going on, or I would have been happy to have let him see the photographs. And if he just said, look, you know, it's a bit different where I'm from, and I feel a bit awkward about it, would you mind deleting this? If it had been a bad picture, I probably would have deleted it, you know. But, you know, I can't even remember what the photo was, but I know there was a lot of half-naked men and women in the shot, and if they're nice, really nice, and let's say I've got other shots. I might do, but in general, I won't delete. But it's not an issue anymore since I use film. You know, I can't delete them. But
that's true.
I don't know. It's a tough one, really. I guess if you're in America, I mean, it depends where you're from as well. I mean, certain cultures act in certain ways to certain people. I mean, you know, I always imagine that America's quite aggressive and they say what they want and they speak their mind a lot. And if someone tells you to do something, they'll be, F you, get the F out of here and all this stuff. And I don't know.
Germany can be quite complicated too in that sense.
Can it?
Yeah, I think.
In what way?
No, people are not that used to street photographers, I'd say. And if they see you taking the picture in public, you might get some comments or. Well, I haven't had any real confrontations so far, but you sense that people are not that familiar with the concept of street photography. And I think also that there are some laws that. Basically you're able to or allowed to take pictures in public, but then the protection of the rights of your own image being taken or then it depends on where you show the images. If you display them on your website and people see that, I think there can be a problem.
Wow. So how does that affect you? That must affect you mentally then when you're taking a picture, right?
You must be aware. But I think, well, as street photography, it's documenting everyday life. And I think if you kind of... if you think too much about that, you self-censor yourself and you shouldn't do that, I think... Just be aware of that because, well, if you might get into a situation where you have to explain what you're doing, then, yeah, you should know. But in the end, you're just documenting everyday life, so.
Wow. Mm. I didn't know that. I knew France had particular laws. I didn't know Germany was the same.
Yeah.
I couldn't imagine having that when I went out. It's not a thought to me, you know. I don't know how I would work if I had that in my head. it'd be really, you know, that gives me a lot more respect for German and French photographers. You know?
Yeah.
Like, why are you taking your picture from 2 miles away? You know. Okay.
Well, then the fourth one.
Okay, the fourth one, it's a little bit different. This is, I'm starting now to, you know, if you go on from the first where it's getting close and being aware of light, the second is where I'm thinking about compositional elements. The third one's where I'm putting it into practice and layering, thinking of focal points, but being aware of everyone else. And then the fourth one, which is more recent, where I've got all those things kind of in my head already, but now I'm starting to think about how things look, I'm more aware of color and line and form. In this picture, again, it's not an amazing photograph. I mean, it's two people on a phone. It's for a project I'm working on and going backstage. And again, it's, you know, my fascination with what people are up to and what they're doing. And this was a Chinese theatre company or opera company or something. They come to London and I emailed them to see if I could get backstage. And it took a couple of days with a PR company and they said, yeah. And, but for me, there are a couple of things happening with the photograph in terms of the photograph itself, but also of how I work. So I'm looking at my arrangements of things. You know, there's a bin, there's a doorway, there are other doorways, there's different light, shadow and color. And unfortunately, there's nothing I can do about what they're doing, but I like the fact that she's got, you know, she's sitting in a chair facing the wall. I thought it was a bit weird. It wasn't until I got home that I realized she's just keeping warm next to the radiator.
Ah, yeah, okay, yeah.
But I'm starting to look at the work of, I don't know how to say his name. Is it Harry Gruyard? Harry Gruyard? I don't know his name. He's got a book called East West or West East. And his work looks amazing. It's all taken color and shadow and lines and forms into consideration. And it's something now that I'm starting to look at in the work and marry everything that I've learned together. So for me, this is kind of the beginnings of that process for me. Like I said, it's not 100% successful, but I know it's a successful start to that process for me.
Yeah, definitely.
In the second point is I know that I'm working a little bit too quickly, because this Chinese company, they're a little bit, before they let me in, they were a little bit cautious, you know, about who I was and where the images were going to be. And I'd got myself a press card, a UK press card, to kind of put people at ease, you know, about who I am. But I realized, I mean, they let me in and they said, you can go anywhere you want now. You can photograph anything you want, you know, do anything you want. And I was really happy by that. You know, it was really nice when to say that. And I spent about 20 minutes there and left. After taking this shot, I thought, I'm done. And I went into London and I got a couple of roles developed. And I got home and I thought, why did I leave so quick? Why? There were so many corridors and places. And beyond this door here, there were changing rooms. And upstairs, there were changing rooms. And it was this big, huge, old Victorian theatre in London, really famous theatre, you know. And I spent 20 minutes there doing really little. And so for me, this photograph is a wake-up call. It's a reminder for me, just take your time, be a bit more exploratory with where you are. And if somebody's giving you a gift of being able to do anything you want, you know, take full advantage of it. You know, don't think that just because you have one shot, that's all you need. Just keep going. Just keep going. You know, you might get something else. But I told myself stupidly, well, I've got a shot now. It's the beginning of what I want.
Yeah.
And went home. Silly, silly thing to think. And this photograph signifies everything that I want, but everything that I shouldn't be doing at the same time. You know, it's interesting to me, really.
Yeah, but a good lesson that you learned from that.
Really. So, I really enjoy it, the process, and I really love making those errors and those mistakes and drilling home, you know, things that I shouldn't be doing and what I should be doing, trying this and trying that. You know, and I say maybe in 10 years I'll get to a point where I've actually got everything together. I don't have to think about anything, you know, and I'm completely content and happy, but I don't know. But that's the story behind that photograph.
It's a nice journey that you took us on there, your evolution as a photographer. Lots of interesting things that you said, and what caught my attention was also that how you went about that, like getting access to this theater group and just search for the opportunities.
I don't know anyone. I don't have any contacts. I'm just I'm still an amateur, you know. I'm still a bit lost in everything, but there are things that I want to do and the places and opportunities that I want to be in.
And
Tony Ray Jones, he wasn't in the crowd. Well, he wasn't always in the crowds. He was on stage and he was backstage and he was in these places. And I thought, I need to get in these places too. You know, I need to get access. And before I got I only got my press card, the UK press card last year. But before that, it was literally, I just had to email people and say, look, can I come and take pictures? You know, and 90% of the time, or 99% of the time, they'd email me back after a couple of days and say, sure, come along and we'll give you a press pass for the event. And that was it. But there are a lot of companies who won't. You know, if you're not affiliated with the press, or if you don't have an editor's letter, you know, they just say no to you straight away. So I joined the National Union of Journalists simply to get the press card, just to put these people at ease when I was emailing, because I'm emailing so many people. I've been trying to get into the Royal Ballet for like 3 years, and they kind of like, they're okay about it, but they still want whatever it is that I'll be doing to be tied to an editorial piece for a publication.
Yeah.
Or they'll have to let, because they have so many requests for people to photograph, you know, they can't just let everyone in.
Yeah, sure.
But that's the only reason why I got the press card, really. It wasn't really to make anyone feel at ease when I'm out and about. I don't take it with
just
me.
Opens,
street photography.
It just opens many doors if you have that press card.
Do you think so? I mean,
It depends. Certain events, you need a press card, and it makes things easier. But on the other hand, I think it's not impossible to get access without the press card. It always depends on how you present yourself to the person who has to grant access to certain venues. So,
it's always a really nicely worded email. It's
exactly.
But if anyone wants to. A place they want to go to, there's always like a press section on the website of whoever it is, and you just get in touch with them. And as long as you tell them what you want to do, who you are, what you're doing, you know, maybe where the pictures are going to be, if you're just going to be on a website or Flickr, you know, or just say, I'm really interested in this. And, you know, 99% of the time they get back to you and say, yeah, that's fine, just come along. You know, that's my experience anyway. So.
Yeah. Yeah, you should always try it at least, and not just, you know, say in advance, okay, they wouldn't accept my my petition anyway. So don't self censor yourself in that way, and always try to get access to whatever interests you. And you find the most interesting things to photograph.
It's difficult for me. I don't want to go too much into it, and I don't want to take too much of your time, but I have a really big problem with a lot of crowds and noise and a lot of people. You know, it's an issue with anxiety I've had since I was about 10. I just can't stand loud noises. So I was freaking out when I eventually came to London. It was a crazy place for me to be in, you know. I wanted to be a painter and a writer and animator, and these things you can do at home in your bedroom. You know, you can make an animated film on your computer at home, and you can write a novel at your desk, and you can paint, you know, in your own studio. There was no need for me to be outside when I was doing those things. But once I was doing photography, I had to be in the middle of things. And so me in the middle of a protest of screaming people, of thousands of people and noise and congestion is an absolute nightmare for me. So in a way, photography, I'm never going to get rid of that issue that I have with it, but it did allow me to feel a little bit more comfortable in those scenarios and get a little bit more used to it. You know, if I'm going out with a particular purpose to photograph, and my mind is in a different place, you know, so I can go on the tube without, you know, freaking out. And because most times on the tube, I'm absolutely freaking out, and I'll get on and then I'll get off at the next stop. It'll take me hours to get across London because of this thing I have. But if I'm going somewhere for a specific purpose, I'm so concentrated and my mind's so focused on that, that I don't think of anything else. You know, I'm really relaxed and I'm excited, and I'm thinking about what I'm going to be photographing, how it's going to be, where I'm going to, where I'm going to put myself, you know. And before I know it, you know, I'm feeling at ease. So photography is really, you know, it's helped me in a way, in parts, to overcome it a tiny bit. You know, I still get nervous. I still have to play my music in my ears full blast so I can't hear anything. But it's helped me be out there, you know, and so it's really, really important to me right now.
Yeah, it's a bit of therapy or a way to face your own fears, whatever that might be, fear of crowds or
absolutely.
To leave your comfort zone.
Yeah, absolutely. You know.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel the same. Photography in that sense is a beautiful thing. It's a very, very personal thing that can teach you so many things about yourself. And then you have the other side of it that through your work you can connect with other people and to get feedback on whatever you've produced and whatever people feel looking at your work and just give something back. But it's for me, basically photography is more like a personal thing, and of course I enjoy feedback from others, but most of all what I like about photography is that inner experience that it gives you.
Oh god, absolutely. And you know, it's a lot of people, that's why a lot of people go to film. I find film relaxing. I know you don't want to talk about gear too much, but I find the film, you know, it's part of that kind of peace and calm that I can find with it. You know, I don't want to go through 6,000 photographs anymore. You know, just a couple of rolls is fine by me, you know?
Yeah.
But it's I don't, the photography, I don't care how long it takes me to get to where it is that I want to be or the standard that I want to be at. You know, if it takes me another 20 or 30 years, you know, it's fine. I'm in no hurry to get things complete and get out there or be known. I have no interest in being known or being popular or being in a collective or any of those things, you know.
Yeah.
I'm after something so personal to me, and I'm after a standard that's so personal to me. That's all I can think about. So all the rest is just, it's more of an inconvenience to me that, you know, I have friends. And you know, I'm not knocking the process of it. That's fine. I don't mind, you know, the collectives and you know, a lot of the friends who are popular and, you know, they published and all that. If that's their thing, that's their thing, and I'm not going to knock them for doing that. It's just not my thing, you know. And it's a shame, really, because, you know, I'm on Facebook with people, but I only have 50 friends. I'm really, I limit myself to Facebook as well, because I don't want to see constant content, the same stuff, you know. But even on Facebook, it's another thing that really depresses me, like Instagram. I find that it throws me off course and throws me off balance. You know, I'm so tuned to my own progression and where what it is that I want to do. I become, I don't know how to explain it really. It's just the whole social media bubble.
Yeah,
I find
it distracts you.
It's too distracting. It's too overwhelming. It's too in my face. And I've just got better things to do, if I'm honest. Yet here I am, you know, in talking to you, and this is going to be on. I'm a hypocrite.
No, it's just sharing your own experience, and everybody, well, there's people out there who enjoy being in collectives and be more social about their photography, and there's others like you who use photography as a creative outlet in a more personal way. I think that's beautiful.
I'm happy for them.
Yeah,
I'm really pleased, you know, for people's success. I love it when people are successful or they get somewhere with it, or they make a book. I'm like, because I know how difficult it is to I can see how difficult it is to get anywhere in street photography. It's really hard. So if anyone makes a success of it, then God, I'm happy for them, like I'd be happy if they were, you know, my brother or one of my sisters, you know, and that's how happy I am for them. But I can't be part of it. I won't try and be a part of it, you know.
Yeah, the important thing, you have to be true to yourself and don't try to follow someone else's path. Just go on your
I don't want to sound like I'm on some high horse or anything, but I'm just thinking of myself at the minute, you know. I get asked a number of times, actually, from various blogs and people, you know, around the world, you know, can we do a piece on this or can we do a piece on that? And I'm too embarrassed, you know. I'm like, I don't want to because I don't feel I'm ready. Like with those photographs I've sent you, I still feel like I'm on a journey where I haven't completed it yet. I haven't got to where I want to be. And I feel embarrassed that they want to show some of this work because I think, well, this work really is still in the stages where I was learning and I don't find it 100% complete yet. The only people I do kind of react to and respond to are students because I get students emailing me a lot, you know, can we take your work and include you in a presentation or can I come and see you and talk about photography and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, yeah, of course, you know, that's great. You know, if they want to know about me, that's fine. You know, I'm flattered by that. But that's about as far as it goes when it comes to putting myself out there, really. I'm a bit shy about it all, really. I don't feel like I'm good yet, you know.
I think it's wonderful to see that progression. And it doesn't have to be perfect. And I don't know, perfect. What is perfect? I mean, it's more about the journey and how you what end you have in mind. But if you ever get there, that's another question. But just enjoy the steps towards whatever goal you have set for yourself.
Well, I have this kind of love-hate relationship with what I see of other people. You know, the same. In one instance, it can really grind at my gears about what's happening. But in the other instance, I think, well, if they're happy doing it, who am I to say anything about it? You know. You know, if somebody after a year of photography wants to do a workshop and sell their prints, and I look at the work and I think that's really bad, how can they do that? How can they sell this work for £100 and charge £300 and you've only been doing it for a year? And I think, how has this person become so popular? But in another respect, I think, well, who am I to think anything bad of anyone else? If they're in their lives doing what they're doing and they're happy, then go ahead and do it, you know.
Exactly, yeah, and that's all that matters.
I'm over here in my life doing my thing, you know. So it's a bit, it's you know, sometimes I'm okay with it, sometimes I'm not. But in general, I have to turn away from the social media bubble and just concentrate on my own things, you know. And
yeah.
I'm happy with that.
Yeah. Great, Mark. It was a real pleasure talking to you, and I think you touched on some very interesting things, and I appreciate your thoughts on photography. For all the listeners who want to find out a little bit more about yourself, you said you're not very active on social media, but there's a website, you have a portfolio. Where can people find out more about yourself and your work?
Our website, markfairhurst.com, Mark with a C. Everything's on there. I mean, I don't edit at the minute. I'm not editing, so I'll dump everything on there, you know, all the bad stuff. So everything's on there. My journals are on there, and my work's on there. And I'm on Instagram at Mark Fairhurst. And that's about it. You know, that's about as much as I'd put myself out. I think I have a Flickr, but I don't really go on Flickr anymore, so I'm not active on there. But a website, Instagram, I'll check out every now and again.
Well, great. Thank you very much, Mark, and all the best for your journey.
Well, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure speaking to you, and best of luck on yours with the podcast.
Thank you. Bye-bye, Mark.
Bye.
Well, this was my conversation with Mark Fairhurst. If you enjoyed it and you like to listen to more interviews with great photographers from all around the world, please head over to artofcreativephotography.com and subscribe to the newsletter. I'll then let you know when the show in English kicks off. Thank you again for listening, and until next time. Bye-bye.